Talk New York sports with us. 888-808-1019. Powered by AT&T Business.
Call his wife and hey, how we doing at 4:03? Get up, it's Friday morning, we made it. I know I'm an hour away from my weekend, possibly you're just getting your day started, but we made it, nonetheless. Another summer weekend, apparently a little rain tonight, but it's been beautiful. The rest of it's supposed to be crazy beautiful and hot the rest of the weekend after tonight. The rest of the week, me and Marco were just talking about it. Got Yankees-Baltimore coming up. Obviously, Yankees-Red Sox. First time in Fenway this year. First time against the Red Sox this year coming up this weekend. And then the big series against Baltimore. I'm going to try and get to some games. He's going to get to some games. We're going to get to some games. As we get ready for a big, big series. It's actually a stretch for both teams, quite honestly. As I told you, the baseball story heading into the break there. I teased that we're going to talk a little baseball here. You know, both teams, important stretches. Yankees in the division, which, by the way, they're only 8-8 in the division. Haven't played a ton of divisional games. And Red Sox, first time this year. And then what will be the major Baltimore series coming up. Yankees, couple games in front, as well as they've played Baltimore right on their tails. And the narrative, the Yankees can't beat good teams, lost 3 out of 4 to Baltimore the first time they played them. Judge is a different player since then, hopefully, after striking out 4 times yesterday. And it's going to be a huge series moving forward. You know where the Yankees are. You know what they'll be. They'll be competing for the division. They're going to own a playoff spot the entire season. And it's a good test of a series and will be important. But we know who they are. The Mets are fighting for their lives. Fighting for their lives tonight. We looked at the schedule. We went over it earlier. They are about to embark on the next month. The next month. Almost to the day. From June 14th to July 14th, their last game before the All-Star break. They play a month worth of baseball against under 500 teams except for the New York Yankees. Now, some of those teams aren't terrible. It's the defending champ, Texas Rangers, who currently are under 500. Or the Chicago Cubs, who are a couple games under 500. The San Diego Padres, a couple games under 500. They start a weekend series against the Padres coming up here later tonight. But that's a stretch of winnable games for this Met team. And as we get to the All-Star break and the trade deadline, I think this ownership group, I think Stearns, I think the Mets want to break it down and trade. I think that's what they want to do. I think they wanted to do it last year. They want to do it again this year. They desperately want to do it. And if you're a Met fan who doesn't want to see it, if you're a Met fan who still wants to have a season, if you're a Met fan who still believes anything can happen, there's the extra wild card, the National League's not that good, the Braves can't score runs, maybe we can figure out a way to make it to a wild card spot, and once you get there, anything is plausible. This is going to be where they have to make up ground. And they're going to have to get more involved. They're going to have to get closer to then even 3 games out, but with 6 teams ahead of them. They're going to have to do better than that over the next month if they are going to convince this general manager, if they're going to convince Stearns to not trade people away, if they're going to convince him to chase this season, if they're going to convince him to give this team a chance to get in and see what happens and embark on the crapshoot that is Major League Baseball playoffs, they're going to have to make ground up right now. And they've gone through, as Marco told you, 6 of the last 8 games have been victories. They've gone through the last 4 series without losing a series. They get a very nice come-from-behind, heroic walk-off win from a 2-run home run from J.D. Martinez. Avoid the disaster that would have been coming back from that London series after getting a split in amazing fashion against Philadelphia. Coming home and losing 2 out of 3 of the Florida Marlins or the Miami Marlins would have been a disaster. And so for me, this win last night was more of a avoiding disaster than, wow, what a great win. But still, moving ahead here, this is the time right now where we are going to decide what this Mets season is. because if they're anywhere near where they are now, this general manager is going to break it up. And like I said, if that's what you're looking for, if that's what you think is best, and I'm sure there are many Met fans out there who do think it's best, last night was a good night too, because Severino is going to be a major piece to be able to sell off. Someone with his track record throwing 98 miles an hour and having the year he's having right now, he will be one of the more wanted starting pitchers in baseball come the trade deadline. A guy who's been an ace for the New York Yankees, made playoff starts, has great stuff, has always been a good pitcher besides last year whenever he's out there, proving he's healthy, no doubt. J.D. Martinez, 30 home runs last year for the Dodgers, has been one of the better sluggers in all of baseball, won a championship with the Boston Red Sox. What team wouldn't want to thrust that right into the middle of their lineup if they're trying to add a little offense, a little right-handed pop to a team chasing a pennant? So no matter which way you look at it, last night was a good night for the Mets. And this upcoming stretch is going to determine how we view them the rest of the year. Right now, the future is now for the New York Mets, and for the Yankees, it's about the closer. It's about attacking the trade deadline. There's no misconception about what the Yankees will be looking to do come the trade deadline. They're looking to acquire pieces, and there are two glaring spots, a corner infielder and some relief pitching help to get them some strikeouts in the back end of the bullpen that they are lacking. Don't get me wrong. Overall, the bullpen is lacking some arms. They're lacking some strikeouts. I just don't think it's in the manner of Clay Holmes. I think Clay Holmes has done a great job for this team. His numbers over this year, his numbers over the previous 4 years in a Yankee uniform have been excellent. He's done a great job. He didn't give up a run for the first month and a half of the season, practically. But he is not the problem, nor is his inability to strike people out. The idea that he relies on getting ground balls or putting the ball in play, and he's a sinker ball pitcher, and he most of the time won't come in and blow people away, does not limit him from being a closer in this league, does not limit him from being a closer on this team, does not limit him from being successful in the postseason, because, by the way, he's thrown 8 postseason innings. We all talk about postseason. It's all we care about. Judge, sure, hit 70 home runs. I don't care. You got 211 in the postseason. Let me see him doing the playoffs. He's a poor situational hitter. We all know this. You're never going to be Derek Jeter unless you perform in the playoffs, Judge. So let's look at playoffs for Clay Holmes. 8 innings, yet to give up a run, allowed 5 base runners. He's been good in the limited playoff appearances he's made as a New York Yankee. And I made the case earlier looking at the great Mariano Rivera, and not to compare them, but just to look at where they are similarly, in not relying on strikeouts. Mariano Rivera struck out less people than Clay Holmes is striking out, and I think he did pretty damn well. So I don't want to hear you need to strike out people if you want to be a closer. I'm tired of hearing, oh, the Yankees need to improve the closer. They don't. One, good luck trying to do it. Look around Major League Baseball. Show me how many relievers you're going to get that are having better years than Clay Holmes. The list is going to be shorter than you think. And then the list of players that you can actually get for the New York Yankees is going to be even smaller than that. Clay Holmes isn't the problem. They do have a Rizzo issue, though. And here's the only problem I have with it. The only problem I have with it is that if you are going to be Clay Holmes, where I admit even on his best days when he's being effective and making his pitches, there's going to be some soft contact, there's going to be some reliancy on infield defense, and that's where the problem lies. Because despite the fact that Volpe is even better than last year and could be on his way, if not for maybe Bobby Witt Jr., on his way to winning another Gold Glove, and he's even better than he was last year when he won the Gold Glove, and while Gleyber Torres can make any play necessary from a second baseman, prone to blunders, prone to mistakes, especially in the big moments. And while I trust DJ LeMahieu, range is probably down. He's still dealing with a foot thing. And I don't know how good he is defensively at third. And we've seen Anthony Rizzo, despite having a great inning the other day, really falter defensively. And I thought the defense cost Clay Holmes yesterday. Where if Rizzo attacks that ball and goes after it, they never have the rally they have to score 2 runs and beat the Yankees. So they've got to be perfect defensively when he's on the mound. And that's the best argument against Clay Holmes, is they don't have the defense to support a closer who puts the ball in play like this. He doesn't have Tino Martinez and Mark Teixeira at first base the way Mo did, or Derek Jeter at shortstop, or Robinson Cano at second base, or Scott Brosius and Alex Rodriguez at third. They're going to need excellent defense. And if you watched that game yesterday, the Rizzo play, and then for me, I have no idea why DJ LeMay, who's so far off the line with a runner on first, that's the winning run. You have got to play no doubles defense. You cannot allow that ball to go down the line. I know it's hit like a bullet. I'm not blaming DJ, but you've got to be closer to the line. You've got to give yourself an opportunity to make sure there's not a ball rolling around the corner, allowing the runner from first to score. But it's more about us just trying to figure out what's wrong with this team when there is nothing wrong with the team practically. It's what it feels like. They have a corner infield problem, and they can add a reliever. But Clay Holmes is not the issue. 888-808-1019. And that's where we are today in the baseball season as we head to the weekend. And the Mets will take on the Padres. The Yankees will go to Fenway for the first time this year. Alex Verdugo will go back to Boston for the first time this year. Juan Soto will experience Yankees Red Sox for the first time this year. Looking forward to it. To pound on the Red Sox like the Yankees pound on everybody else. Hello, Eric and Ronkonkoma. How are you?
Hey, C-Mac. Good morning. How are you doing?
Good morning. How are you?
Loving the movie talk also. You know, I mean,
listen. When we have these 5-hour shows, I like to mix in some different stuff. So we mixed in a little movie talk.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of stuff like you mentioned the Lord of the Rings, and certainly, I mean, I was telling Fleeks again, you can't go wrong with the Dark Knight, and lately John Wick's been a big thing I've been watching.
Sure. I can see the action movie. I think there's a lot of Arnold Schwarzenegger movies that would make the list. In case anybody doesn't know what we're talking about, movies that would be on like TNT or TBS, where you get the commercial breaks and you probably get overdubs on cursing and everything like that, so it ruins certain movies. But what's the movies when flipping through regular cable television that you can't pass up, that once it's on, you have to leave it on? So yep. I think Arnold Schwarzenegger movies fall into that a little bit. I said Last Action Hero was one for me. And the other reason I came up with the list, because there's a certain set of movies that are always on. Like for me, I always catch A Few Good Men on like TNT or, Shawshank Redemption.
Usually AMC.
Or Shawshank Redemption ends up on one of those channels. There's also movies that you see, so you would put on this list. But I could see, obviously I'm a Lord of the Rings guy, but I didn't want to force that on people, but... Yeah, action movies can work on it.
They've been showing that a lot, yep.
Yep.
And of course, my Marvel stuff, there's been, that's gotten me through, a lot of med games lately. So, I've been able to switch off when I need to. But, getting on the Mets where you were just talking about, they are without a doubt a Jekyll and Hyde team, with however you want to look at it. I mean, how frustrating is it that, yes, they got the win, but it was three hits, against the Marlins team that, is in, last place team, and it took the third hit to be a two-run homer to win the game.
No doubt.
I mean, it's just so frustrating, and I'm done with looking at a schedule saying, well, these are all winnable games because, I've seen it before where they've, gone into, that last month of 2022 where it should have been the easiest of all schedules and they completely melted down, for whatever the reason being.
Oh, absolutely.
But it happened.
Yeah, Eric, so I think you're 100% right and your concerns are warranted. I'm just telling you that this is the situation. I'm not telling you I expect them to go out there and do it. They have to go do it, though. They're in a position where they have winnable games, right? I get your point that you're tired of hearing that, but this is what it is. Like they're going to have to go out and figure out a way to win some of these games. Let me go over the schedule again just real quick, right? All of these teams besides the Yankees are under 500. Some of the names will jump out at you because you don't expect them to be teams that are under 500, but they are. San Diego at home, then they go on the road for Texas and Chicago. Now, the Rangers are the defending champs. They got some of their starting pitching back. They're still waiting on DeGrom. Scherzer has come back. Seager has come back, so maybe they're a little bit better than a 500 team, no doubt, but they are under 500 right now and still have struggled, and the bullpen's been a disaster. Cubs under 500 on the road. They come home for the Yankees, clearly for two-game set, not under 500. You finish out the homestand with the Houston Astros, who are devastated by injuries and struggling, and they're 5-6 games under 500. You go on the road for Washington, Pittsburgh, come home for Washington, Colorado, and that leads you into the All-Star game. So that's, besides the Yankees, that's every team I just mentioned is under 500. You want to call them winnable games, you want to call them whatever you may, call them whatever you want. And then you come out of the All-Star break against Miami. But then you got the Yankees, Atlanta, Minnesota. But the schedule's not that tough for the next month. And that's where these decisions are going to be made by this team. If you fall further behind, if this is not a productive month for you, if you are end up in a worse position come the All-Star break than where you are now, which is looking up at six teams but only three games out of the wild card, if you are worse than that as the All-Star game is played, kiss the season goodbye. Like that, you don't have all year. That's the thing about the Mets. You don't have all year to make it up. Oh, it's a long season. It's not that long of a season. Because you have a general manager who, in my opinion, is looking to break it down if he has the opportunity. You have to force his hand. You have to make him not break it down. And that has to be done now. Has to be done now. You don't have all year. Danny in Belrose. What's up, Danny?
Good morning, Chris. How's it going?
It's going great, Danny. How are you?
Pretty good. Can't complain. You know, at least you took three out of four from the Royals.
Absolutely. Listen, let me tell you something right now. I was surprised. I'm never surprised by the Yankee overreaction anymore, but this is how you know it's going well. This is how I know it's going well. They were being no-hit in a game against the Kansas City Royals. They came back, they scored three runs in the eighth to take the lead, and then they lost the game in heartbreaking fashion as their closer blew the game. They made mistakes, and they lost the game they absolutely should have won. And my reaction was, okay, we got Boston tomorrow. Like, it didn't faze me in the slightest. That's how you know a season is going well. That heartbreaking loss didn't even bother me. I was at my son's football game watching it on my phone at the time it happened, and I turned it off and went, okay, Boston coming up, I can't wait, and went back to watching my son in this hideous Eagles uniform they put him in.
That's all right. You know, did they at least win?
Did they win? I have no idea. Do they even keep track at 7 years old? I'm not even sure they do. I think they won. I have no idea. They score touchdowns.
Yeah, so,
the other team scores touchdowns. They don't. There's not a scoreboard. No one's really keeping track.
Okay. I got a question. Have you checked out the show on Apple TV Plus, Dark Matter?
No, I do. I drew the line somewhere. I had every other one. I've not gotten Apple TV Plus. I don't have it. So I have not. I have not watched anything on Apple TV Plus.
Oh, but if you do, I highly recommend it. It's
Dark
a great
Matter.
Dark Matter. I'm already three episodes in. It's basically about a scientist who deals with thermodynamics, and he pretty much gets abducted, and then what happens after that? He ends up in an alternate reality. It's really, really interesting.
Okay,
I mean,
I'll try and check it out. Seems a little complicated to explain over the radio, but sure, I'll give it a try.
When this happened, you talk about it on The Fan.
It'll be a 1-1 to Judge. The pitch swung on and hit. Deep center field. Trout on the run. Aaron Judge, number 50.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 4:27. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. We got calls lined up. 888-808-1019. 888-808-1019. Taking your baseball calls here. Jeff in Fairview. What's up, Jeff?
What's up, Chris? The Padres are 37 and 35.
The two games over.
No, oh, I'm sorry. Did I guess I meant besides the Padres and then threw them in as I kept doing it.
That's right. Well, that's because they were 35-35, and they played in Oakland Tuesday. They won, and Wednesday they won, so then at 37-35.
You are correct.
Who cares? Yeah. I'm a Mets fan, you know that. I'll talk about the Yankees. Yeah, Sparky Lyle, 1977, wins a Cy Young Award
right.
as a relief pitcher.
Yes.
26 saves, 137 innings, only 68 strikeouts.
Right.
Then he loses his job the next year to Goose Gossage.
Right.
Go figure.
Well, that was the boss.
Well, yeah, Gossage was better, but still, you got to give Sparky Lyle
sure.
credit. Not really a hard thrower. Yeah, you know, he just knew how to get people out.
Right.
You read his book?
Sparky Lyle's book?
Yeah.
I did not.
The Bronx Zoo, I think. I think he wrote that one.
Oh,
it was great. It was,
Sparky Lyle wrote the book, Bronx Zoo? I saw The Bronx is Burning with John Turturro as Billy Martin.
Yeah, don't quote me on the title, but Sparky Lyle did have a book. It's mm-hmm. very good. I recommend it. And Billy Martin's book is good, too. Number one.
Yeah, I didn't read that one either.
Oh, you got to read it. It's great. Because he used to manage the game, and he used to tell his players during the game why he's doing things. That's how great of a manager he was. You know, if you were a player, you want to be a manager,
yeah.
I would sit by Billy Martin the whole game just to listen to him. It's a really good book.
Yeah. I mean, he sure told Reggie Jackson why he was taking him out of the game in Fenway. I remember that one. He made it very clear. Billy Martin made it very clear to Reggie Jackson why he was coming out of that game. Maury in Belmore. What's up, Maury?
Tonight is your night.
Tonight is your night, bro.
Can you imagine telling Reggie to come out of the game? I don't know if I'd have the cojones.
Yeah, I know. And then look for a fight at the top of the dugout as soon as he walked in.
I mean, are you kidding me?
He was a different Billy Martin. I know a caller got on me yesterday for occasionally saying that was before my time. I wish I was around for and really remember what must have been like to have Steinbrenner hiring and firing him. I can't even. Can you imagine in today's day and age of almost any sport? But like, can you imagine if Joe Girardi, for example, or now Aaron Boone, or just somebody manages the Yankees like five times over the next 10 years. Like, how friggin' bizarre was that? Like, we can't even comprehend that anymore. I wasn't around for it. I mean, it's just so bizarre. At least, I was alive for it. I don't remember it. I was a young child. But, like, how friggin' weird was that? I'm listening to it a little bit in Andy Martino's book. Like, it's crazy to me, the relationship they had and constantly firing and hiring and firing and hiring. Like, it's crazy.
It was unstable, that's for sure. But one thing that came out of it is, you know, it was a disaster. But at the end of the day, Reggie's hitting four home runs against the Dodgers in the World Series. I mean, incredible what happened. One thing I wanted to bring up, the Babe Ruth the Yogi Berra Netflix special. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but his granddaughter created it. And
yeah.
They were watching.
I don't think it was a Netflix thing. It might be on Netflix now, but it wasn't.
Maybe it's on Netflix.
Yeah, it's not. It was. It was like in the movie theater or something.
It was really good. Chris.
Yeah, I saw it. Great. I saw it. I thought it was pretty good. Yogi's a very fascinating character. Yeah.
Yeah, they're like Grandpa. They said the five remaining greatest baseball players. Why aren't you there?
I know.
More rings than every single one of them. I thought that was great.
Yeah.
And then last but not least, I think what I'm seeing in Florida is a team destined to win the Stanley Cup.
Oh, well, I mean, clearly.
They're working their tail off, and they're beating the best team out there. I mean, you got to hand it to them. I mean, whether Canada ever sees the Stanley Cup again in the next 20 years.
I mean, this is as close as...
to go to Florida.
Yeah,
what
I mean, this is...
going on?
Yeah, this is as close as they've gotten, but Florida is just a... Florida is just a force. There's no two ways about it. They have dominated this series. They've dominated the Stanley Cup playoffs. I mean, I guess Ranger fans can take solace in the idea that they probably gave him the hardest time, if that's even, you know, it's certainly hard. They've gave him a harder time than Edmonton. They're up 3-0, and, you know, barring Edmonton winning three consecutive games, I don't think they're going to force a game seven and do better than the Rangers. So both finals here have been extremely disappointing. No juice, no buzz. I mean, there's been, you know, I mean, Luka kind of embarrassed himself in game three, and that's been a talking point. And Porzingis gets hurt, and you know, the Boston Celtics, the great franchise, is going to win another championship, their first since 2008. But I mean, really, not much going on there, as both series are 3-0, and both series are over kaputs and have been a complete domination. And the better team's going to win. And that's what we found out. Let's be honest. I know I was yelling. I mean, we have to just come to reality here on some level. I was yelling about it. I know Sal was yelling about it. And I know it's hard to admit, and you think like the Rangers didn't play well, and I don't think they did particularly. But the Panthers were the better team. The Panthers were more suited for this tournament. The Panthers are more suited for the playoffs. And they deserve to be the Stanley Cup champion, and they were far better than everybody else in front of them. And the same thing for the Boston Celtics. I mean, let's be honest. I think they lost games out of sheer boredom. They dropped one to Miami just out of sheer boredom. Like, there's no doubt. Even though it was early on in the playoffs, the second game they played, like, there is just, they have been a dominant force inside this playoffs and have ran through it. And they've been the best team. They've got two of the best players in the NBA. And I don't know if you saw, it is amazing. I was talking about it earlier. There's been a picture making its way around, going viral, of Tatum and Tkachuk of the Panthers together on a high school bus. I guess they were high school friends. And they are both at this, like, I know Stafford and Kershaw were like pitcher and catcher in high school. But to be in the finals at the exact same time, to play the two sports that where their championships are literally at the same time, to both be one game away from winning a championship, both be up 3-0, and to be that close of friends, to have a picture circulating of the time you guys were hanging out in high school, that is crazy. But that's exactly what's going on, as the Boston Celtics are going to capture another championship. Boston, Boston, Boston. Maybe Tom Brady can have another event, and we can really focus on celebrating Boston. Anybody else want to come out of the woodwork? What's going on? Anyone else want to feel like, can we celebrate? Let's see. I can't wait for the parade. I'm sure KG will be, I'm sure, you know, Kevin Garnett will be there. They'll bring everybody out of the woodwork. I don't think Larry Bird has a good standing with the organization right now, but they'll figure out something. Maybe we could do something else to celebrate Boston, because God knows we need it. God knows we need another celebration of Tom Brady, by the way. And I don't want to be a hater, because I saw, I do want to be a hater. I saw the clip of his speech. I couldn't stomach it the other night. I didn't want to watch it. But I saw the speech. It's a great speech. Life is hard. Football teaches us life is hard. We've overcome the hardness. Like, I get it. I get it. It was a nice speech, and it was a good message. Shut up, Tom. I just can't take it. I'm sorry. I can't take it from him. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is about him. I don't know what it is about his stupid face, and I don't know what it is about his, you know, the hair looks better than ever. The guy is legitimately Benjamin Button, and he's aging in reverse. They show that clip of him with no shirt on at the NFL draft, you know, 40 years ago or whenever it was, and the freaking guy looks better today than he did at the NFL draft. He's blessed on high by the Prince of Darkness. And they got to celebrate him in the off season. It's not even, he can't even get a day week one. First home game against the Jets, even to rub it in, something. No, it's got to be in the middle of the off season. The whole building there, giving Belichick a standing ovation, just celebrating the greatness that was the New England Patriots. Well, it's over, and you suck now, and you're going to be back to, you're going to be just one of us. And we're going to have to see Tom Brady every day. What game does Tom Brady have this week? He's starting with Dallas and Cleveland. I can't wait. So sick of Tom Brady, man. He's got to do everything. He's got the roast. He's got this. He's got the games coming. Fox pretty much threw a party for him 2 weeks ago. Was that 2 weeks ago? Fox threw pretty much just a big party to announce what games he's doing so he could talk and be on TV. Do we really love Tom Brady this much? Like, really? I don't understand it. I don't understand it. 888-808. I just don't. I don't get it. I don't get the. I understand he won a lot of Super Bowls and football is king. I get it. But I'm so sick of him. I'm completely saturated with Tom Brady. Tom Brady saturated. Can't take anymore. Not another drop. Not another ounce. This sponge is full. Can't take it.
We know what we think. What do you think? Call the Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by AT&T Business.
All right, 4:43. The other big news of the day coming out of the NFL is Trevor Lawrence of the Jacksonville Jaguars got an enormous contract. 5 years, $275 million. $200 million guaranteed. $30-plus million signing bonus. Just an enormous contract. He's now tied with Joe Burrow as the largest contract annually. He'll be making the most money annually along with Joe Burrow in the NFL. And, you know, he's had a up and down career, honestly. He hasn't been a quarterback that, with all the promise and one of the bigger prospects coming out of Clemson and coming out of college and never losing a game on Saturday and, you know, the national championship and, you know, being one of those, you know, the most talked about quarterback in a long time and a can't-miss prospect. And I know one that Fliegelman and many Jet fans wish they had an opportunity to draft instead of who they instead of Zach Wilson. But obviously, rookie year under a terrible head coach in Urban Meyer, did not go well at all. Had a good second year. And then last year was playing great football. I remember, you know, me and Fleece both picked him as a sneaky MVP candidate because we thought he would dominate that division. Right? Just the AFC South seemed like a division that the Jacksonville Jaguars would dominate. And for a while, they were. And, you know, I remember coming back from London, what were they, 8-3 at one point? And the one seed in the AFC. And then he got hurt and it kind of all fell apart. And I would say the Eagles in the NFC and then the Jags in the AFC completely just became shells of themselves by the end of the season. And he was dealing with something clearly. And they decide now to give him this contract, which it can't be off of what he's done so far. It's going to be what they believe he can do moving forward. You know, another year in this offense and in that division, he still should be, and what they still expect to be, is a quarterback who is going to lead them to the playoffs every single year. Like that, they are a playoff contender every year with him. Now, he's paid like the best. Clearly, he is not. I don't even know if he's top. I don't know, would you put him in top 8 right now? He's probably right around top 10 if you're being fair about it. But I do think he can grow. I do think he can get better. And he's had, you know, a decent start to his career, but ultimately he's 1-1 in the playoffs. Last year completely faded and lost the division at the end of the year that they had no business losing. Had a horrendous second half. Hasn't really, you know, 58 touchdown passes, 39 interceptions, 63.8% completion percentage. Like, he hasn't been what you would hope he would have been. But when you look around the league, he was the next guy up, and this is what quarterbacks get paid. Daniel Jones gets paid this money. Everyone tells me it's going to be a contract that you're going to eventually call a steal, right? And I'm sure we're going to hear the same thing about Lawrence eventually down the line. In a couple of years, it's going to be a bargain as everybody signs around him. And that's clearly, I mean, as Dak is looking for a new contract, as Tua is looking for a new contract, and they have had much more success on the field, although, you know, we all know the limitations, at least so far, of Dak and Tua, in my mind. I mean, and that's what's tough about these contracts. I mean, like, to me, that's why when you look at Justin Jefferson and some of the other big contracts in the NFL, unless you're going to pay a quarterback that big money, as great as Justin Jefferson is, and he's the best wide receiver in the league, and wide receivers can make a huge difference, and you know they impact the game on a tremendous level, and we see how good he is. I mean, this is what you have to pay quarterbacks who haven't even hit what you thought they were. I mean, Joe Burrow at least stepped into the league and took his team to the Super Bowl. Patrick Mahomes gets paid, you know, what he gets paid. But then even, you know, you're going to pay Dak Prescott this money. Daniel Jones makes $40 million. You got to pay Tua, who in my mind is a talented quarterback and is accurate and probably has a little bit more arm strength than many want to give him credit for, but is clearly in an offense built on timing, is clearly on an offense built with speed and a wide receiving core that rivals almost no one else in the NFL. And for him to, you know, be successful, it's so predicated on making sure you're in decent weather, making sure everyone's healthy, making sure, you know, everything is perfect for them. Otherwise, to go on the road, go in a cold weather stadium, go, you know, take on the elements, it's almost as if I'm not sure that offense can compete. And I don't know if he can, you know, make the throws through the wind. I don't know if he can be that guy, but he's going to get paid like it because they don't really have an option. And the Jaguars don't have an option. Daniel Jones, the Giants and Daniel Jones didn't have an option. I mean, the Giants won that playoff game, and there was nothing else to do but pay Daniel Jones. And while the money nearly isn't as, you know, much guaranteed, and they're going to find a way to work their way out of it after this year, at least I would think, barring another great season, which another great season would probably be Daniel Jones's first. I know he had a good season, and he led them to the playoffs, but I mean, it's hard to imagine giving out these big contracts to almost anyone else besides, you know, premium pass rushers, the occasional unbelievable standout wide receiver, a shutdown corner. And that's why, you know, when you look at it in the context of us around here, I mean, that's why this is so big for the Jets to win now. I mean, you're going to look at it, they're going to have to pay Sauce Gardner, they're going to have to pay Garrett Wilson. They're going to have to start to pay these young players. They're going to want contract extensions. And right now they have this opportunity to with Aaron Rodgers and this offense and this defense full of young, talented players. You're looking to extend Reed. You got to work on a Haason Reddick contract. You got a lot to deal with. But ultimately, they're in a position right now to go out there and win for the next couple of years before they are going to have to pay all these guys. Because you look at the money thrown around, and as much as, yeah, okay, the money's going to go up, everything's going to go up, you pay these guys, to use a Tiki Barber word, the salary cap is fungible. I understand that. You can mess with it. You can figure out a way around it. We've seen teams figure their way around it constantly. We saw 2 years ago, all right, was it 2 years ago, the Rams? I think it was it after the Super Bowl, the year of the Super Bowl, whatever. They paid... That was the year after the Super Bowl. They gave Stafford an enormous contract. They gave Cooper Kupp the biggest contract any wide receiver had up until that point. They repaid Donald. They paid all their primetime players, all their star players, and they ended up $16 million under the cap better than they were the previous year. So you can always figure out, and they didn't have a draft pick for like 6 or 7 years. You can always figure out a way to get around the cap on some level, I suppose. But, I mean, when you're paying a guy who hasn't proven himself, you're paying a guy who hasn't had great numbers, you're paying a guy who faltered down the stretch of last year and lost a division that they had absolutely no business losing and were as clear-cut a favorite as any team in football to win their division, were 8-3, much like the Jets under Brett Favre, and only to collapse and now get paid $200 million in guaranteed money. It's a lot. That is a lot. But hey, it's a lot to give Daniel Jones $40 million. And the Giants obviously been talking a lot about their defense, who hopefully the defensive front, I mean, that's what you're really looking at, right? When you look at this defense, and what I'm hoping changes under this new regime is they absolutely try and get after the quarterback. Because that's the one thing about Wink's defense, who came in and did a great job with this team. There's no doubt about it. Wink came in and did a great job with that defense. They had the great year. They were as, you know, the offense didn't really score points. The offense didn't score 30 points until the last game of the year against the Colts. Like they didn't, and then again in the playoffs against Minnesota. But they were, you know, some big-time plays at the end of the games, but they were the team getting turnovers off Lamar Jackson late in games against Baltimore. They were the team holding Aaron Rodgers out in London. They were the team, you know, their turnovers and their aggressiveness was a lot if not most of the reason that they were. It was Saquon Barkley in the defense, really, and Daniel Jones. I don't want to completely dismiss him. But that next year with Wink, it just felt like Kayvon Thibodeau is I understand he's getting double digit sacks, which edge rushers don't get under Wink Martindale, but it shouldn't be that much of a chore. He shouldn't be dropping it back into pass coverage on third and long at their own 5 yard line. Like, it was just so many times you saw him dropping into coverage or not going after the quarterback, or like, I just hated that aspect of it because we know how important it is to disrupt the other team's. I mean, that's the name of the game. Protect your quarterback, make plays down the field, and get after the other team's quarterback. That's the NFL today. And so hopefully now that they've added the other edge rusher, now that they've got hopefully Thibodeau in a scheme where he can actually get after it and him and Burns can go and get the quarterback, plus you have Dexter Lawrence, arguably one of, if not the best, you know, D tackles in the sport. That's really the strength of the team as I see it. I mean, I don't know if there's another group from the New York Giants that's as strong. That's certainly, even with Neighbors, not the wide receiving core. I'd like to think it's going to improve mightily with him, but I think the idea that we're so pleased with what we've seen from camp here kind of makes me chuckle. But I think it's been so long since we've seen any kind of dynamic explosiveness out of anyone in the wide receiving core that we don't know how to talk about it. But as much as I like Wandale Robinson, as much as I think Hyatt can get down the field, you'd like him to open up the route tree a little bit. But, and then obviously Neighbors, hopefully the wide receiving core takes a big jump up. Hopefully the offensive line, with Neal still dealing with things and away from the team, hopefully the offensive line, with the additions they've made and the new offensive line coach coming over from the Raiders, can rejuvenate that group, which has been, you know, the Achilles heel and the, you know, death knell of this team year after year after year. But ultimately, and the defensive backs are young, you're going to have to try and figure that out. The linebacking core, well, McFadden and Bobby Okereke has clearly taken a step up and been better than it's been over the last handful of years. But that defensive front and getting after the quarterback is going to have to be the bread and butter of this team. That has got to be the strongest part of the team, because if it's not, I really don't know what else they do well to expect a good year from the New York Giants. And I know everyone's excited for Daniel Jones. Hell, if I'm being honest with myself, I'm excited to see Daniel Jones. Nobody wants to see him hurt. We saw what the team looks like without him, and we've seen the best it's been over the last handful of years was when Daniel Jones was able to run, and that's clearly my main concern. My main concern about this Giant team, this Giant offense, and Daniel Jones is he is now coming off 2 out of the last 3 years, finishing his season with season-ending surgery, whether it's on his neck or then the blown-out knee. And for someone whose game is so clearly related to his running ability, I mean, it's without question the best part of his game. And so now I'm expecting a guy who, when they went to the playoffs with Daniel Jones, did it based on, and you watch the games, there's no doubt, look at your first option. If it's not there, tuck it and run. I mean, that's how. Go look back at that game in that season against the Bears. Go look at back in that season against the Texans when he's handing it off 40, 35 times to Saquon Barkley. Look at those games. He didn't stand back in the pocket. He didn't make plays down the field. He tucked it and ran. And now I got to hope that he still has that element of his game where every time he runs, I'm worried about his knee, I'm worried about him taking a hit, and how his neck's going to react, because now that's happened, and he's had the neck injury reoccur last year. Like, it's too much to have a lot of faith in with the New York Giants and Daniel Jones. It just is. So if they're going to be successful, I would think it's going to be this defense. I would think it's going to be the front seven of the linebacking core, and clearly the defensive front, where you've got these two edge rushers who hopefully in this new regime actually go out there and attempt to get after the quarterback. I remember when Hassan Reddick came over to the Jets, obviously besides wanting the contract, as we still wait for that to play out. One of the other things that I remember me and Fliegelman both laughing at was, well, he's kind of sack happy. He's kind of sack happy. He chases the sack. Well, I would hope my edge rusher would. It seems like a positive to me, and I wish Kayvon Thibodeau had a little bit more of that in his game. So we're going to see if the Giants can thrust that upon him, as we've, you know, during the Giant camp, who got completely overshadowed by the Jets and the Aaron Rodgers situation, which last year, if you remember, everybody was really pleased with. Do you remember every Giant fan and every Giant reporter going, we're quietly going about our business while the Jets are making all the noise, while the Jets are the ones doing Hard Knocks, and now the Giants are doing Hard Knocks offseason. But, oh, the Jets, let everyone talk about the Jets. We're quietly going about our business building something here. Yeah, you built something. You built something. And I understand people might be upset at the idea that these guys are on the hot seat, that it's somehow disrespectful to say that a coach and GM who've been here for 2 years, 1 year went to the playoffs, that a coach in Brian Daboll, who kind of felt like he turned the whole organization around and changed the culture almost immediately, could be on the hot seat. But there's a certain man out there waiting. And as much as it seems ridiculous and as much as it seems unlikely, you know he wants to hop back in this, and there's no organization he has more of a deeper connection to, or I would think want to come coach, than the New York Giants, and they can't have another season where it's just dead. This is a huge season for Daniel Jones. It's a huge season for the coach. It's a huge season for the GM. It's a big season for the Giants to at least be competitive. Sound like a little Giant talk there, because we haven't talked about them in forever. We're obsessed with the Jets and whether or not Aaron Rodgers is showing up to practice or if he's on vacation or whatever, and then obviously the baseball. All right, but that's it for me. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling over the last 5 hours. We've reached the end of another midnight ride. I appreciate it. Fliegelman, thank you very much. Thank you for all the movie talk and all the calls. It was fun. Everybody have a great weekend. The Yankees will be up in Fenway for the first time this year. That should be fun. Mets take on the Padres. Enjoy it. Let's go, Yankees. Let's go, Mets. I'll catch everybody Monday, 2 a.m. I'm out of here. Sports Radio 101.9 FM.